The Netflix young adult romance To All the Boys I've Loved Before is probably in your Twitter feed. It's on your Instagram feed. It's in dorm rooms and living rooms and waiting rooms around the world. Adapted from the book by Jenny Han, it stars Lana Condor and Noah Centineo as Lara Jean and Peter, a high school pair who may or may not, but come on, they will, end up together. We figured it was time for Pop Culture Happy Hour to talk about this wildly popular film, and we put together a very special panel. We are ready, so come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from CBS All Access, presenting their new original series, $1, a thrilling mystery that follows a group of people in a small Rust Belt town, divided by deep class and cultural divides, as they all find themselves involved in a horrifying multiple murder, starring John Carroll Lynch, and now streaming only on CBS All Access. Visit cbs.com/happyhour for your free trial of CBS All Access.
Welcome back. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm here at NPR headquarters in Washington, and the rest of our wonderful panel is up in New York in the room that I would love to be in right now. First, from NPR's Code Switch, Kat Chow. Hey, Kat.
Hey.
And also with us, the co-host of the podcast, The Nod, Brittany Luce. Hey, Brittany.
Hello.
And finally, a writer and editor at Complex, not to mention a radio DJ in her spare time, Kiana Fitzgerald. Hi, Kiana.
Hey, Linda.
I am so excited that you are all here. And to give anyone listening just enough information about the film without telling you too much, it relies on romantic conventions like Peter and Lara Jean fake dating. There are notes that go astray that Lara Jean writes, love notes, and there's misplaced jealousy. There's lots and lots of longing. There's maybe just a little bit of kissing. Just a little. Well. Kat, I'm going to start with you. What was your reaction to this film when you first saw it?
At first, I mean, I love rom-coms. And as you know, I mean, I love binging everything rom-com related. And so when I first started watching this, I just couldn't get over how tender the relationship between Lara Jean Covey and Peter Kavinsky was. And I just kept squealing about it. And I was watching it with my fiance, and I kept saying, oh my God, Peter Kavinsky is so dreamy. And I just felt this nostalgia because I kind of related to Lara Jean, not just because she's Asian American in the movie, but because she's got that whole introvert thing going on, mm-hmm. Which I'm sure we'll talk more about. But I adored it. I thought that there were so many moments where you were like, I wish someone would look at me like Peter Kavinsky. I wish someone would move the popcorn for my sister when having a pillow fight on the couch.
Oh, it's yeah.
A small thing.
I loved it.
Responsible, yes. Responsible boy he is, because he moves the popcorn out of the way so the pillow fight doesn't make a mess. What more can you ask? I ask you.
Right. There's nothing else. Nothing.
How about you, Brittany? What'd you think?
I loved it. And I'd seen the trailer previously, and I was interested in it because I also love rom-coms. I'm crazy about them, and my boyfriend does too. But then I was looking at my Twitter feed all weekend, and I saw all these grown black women freaking out. Mm-hmm. They were like, you have to see this movie! And I was like, all right, I'll check it out. And at first, I was like, I don't know. I wasn't sure if I was necessarily going to be able to relate to Lara Jean because I'm actually, shocker, I'm not very introverted. But I appreciated the fact that she was really confident and that like her introversion didn't show up as her being like a doormat.
Right.
Like she knew when to stand up for herself.
Right.
She knew when to sort of like make her presence known. A place where I did relate to her is like being, I was going to say younger, not that much younger, like basically before I met my boyfriend 3 years ago, still feeling like I didn't know when I could tell if a boy liked me and like afraid to share my feelings.
Yeah.
Like there were so many themes in there that I felt resonated with me as an adult. And most importantly, going back to the point about Peter being tender, one of the things I loved about the film that was way different than the ones that we all kind of grew up with, like She's All That,
yeah,
and those types of films, everybody just really wanted to be as nice to each other as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't actually, like, it made it so that being mean or having like bad intentions wasn't ever a part of the plot. Like there was still a lot of interesting stuff going on, but everybody was really kind and respectful to each other for the most part. And it was just so refreshing and it made me feel so cozy.
Yeah, I agree. How about you, Kiana? Cozy?
Quite cozy. It was really, really fun to just be able to sit with a movie that I related to the main character in such a direct way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, growing up, I was an introvert. I was someone that pretty much kept to myself when it came to dating, when it came to even friendships with people who didn't, you know, fall directly in the silos that I did. So it was really refreshing to just see someone reflected back at me that had the same experiences with people, the same moments where I was like, oh, does this boy like me? Or, you know, I have a crush on, I looked in my diary before I got here and I remember specifically, oh, wow. I was like 13 or 14 when I had this diary and I wrote 18 names of boys that I had crushes on.
Girl.
And yeah, I was wilding out.
Wow.
But the thing is, like, I remember like having crushes on people and being like, oh my gosh, I want someone to like me back. And then just like, you know, keeping it to myself because I don't want people thinking I'm crazy. And then the letters for her got out and I was like, oh my God. Like, I could not imagine.
If that list got out.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh my, if that list got out.
But like, maybe you would have found a Peter Kavinsky though.
Maybe I would have found a Peter Kavinsky. But yeah, so I really related to Lara Jean and I thought it was a really, really beautiful, adorable movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remembered while I was watching this that it wasn't a list of names of boys, but I remembered that when I was probably 13, I had a book that I wrote poems in and I took it with me. I was at summer camp and I realized at some point that people had found it because they were making comments. They would like quote lines to me.
Oh, no.
And I realized that they had found it and like a bunch of them had sat around and read it together.
Oh, no. What?
And I was super upset. It was one of those moments where you're just so completely mortified. Right. And those moments of revealing something about yourself, because the way that she writes these letters, they function like a diary. They're letters to boys, but she doesn't send them. She puts them in a box. And so it is that moment of kind of as a teenager realizing that all of a sudden all these feelings that you're trying to deal with by writing them down, if you're the kind of person who deals with your feelings by writing them down, it does feel very threatening to have a bunch of people suddenly know all about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about Peter Kavinsky, other than the word tender, which I completely agree with, totally agree with? Why is he like, and this is what I wrote in our notes, why is he like the Timothy Chalamet of Netflix YA? Like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, he's amazing. Because Noah Centineo, you know, was on a few seasons of The Fosters, but he wasn't like a gigantic star. And now he's like the star of Twitter.
Yeah. I watched SPF 18 last night, which is a movie that he was in that came out in 2017. It is much different than To All the Boys. And I would say Noah's performance is a little different. I mean, he's still great. But I think for me, what solidified that he was not just some lacrosse bro in the movie and that he had more depth was when Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean started bonding about their parents. And yeah. I kept thinking, oh, there's much more to this relationship. And there's also so much more that he brings to the role where, I don't know, I've read a lot of mixed reviews about him, but I think that the humor that he adds to things has really added elements where there's some discussion about the whole hand in the pockets thing,
mm-hmm. yes.
where I think where Lara Jean and Peter Kavinsky agree that one of the things that they can do as, you know, in their relationship without giving too much away is they can put their hands in each other's butt pockets, which I think is such a charming middle school thing.
Yes.
But there is a scene where Noah Centineo just did this on his own where he somehow picks up Lana Condor and he spins her around with his hand in her butt pocket.
Yeah, it was very artful.
Yeah, it was very artful.
Exactly.
I don't know. So, I mean, I guess I kind of went from being like, okay, so Peter Kavinsky as a character is really cool, but then actually, wait, the actor himself, he just seems really at ease in this role as charming boy.
Yeah.
Charming man. I'm sorry. Charming man.
Oh.
Charming young man.
Young man. There we go. I'll take it.
Charming young man.
I really felt like Peter was equally affable and charming. He was very handsome. He was very striking as a character, but it was, you know, in the moments where, like Kat said, where he had the wherewithal to understand that Lara Jean was coming from a very, like, in some ways, broken place. You know, her mother is no longer there and his father is no longer in his life. So they're both coming from this place where they have this emptiness. And that was a moment that solidified it to me where, like, I was all in. I was like, okay, this kid gets it.
I think like he was so, I think he was really emotionally aware in a way that like they didn't necessarily call too much attention to in the film, which I liked because I'm like, please indoctrinate these young kids with like better like emotional relation skills than we have. But like when he decided to open up about his father, or there's a scene where they're on a ski trip and they're having a conversation about like, I think him trying to let Lara Jean know that he really likes her. He's equal parts confident, but also vulnerable,
yeah.
Which is I think a thing that's hard for a lot of boys to do. It's hard for a lot of grown men to do. It's hard for a lot of grown people to do. He does a really good job sort of like modeling the behavior that he would like to see from Lara Jean and wanting to be closer to her.
Yeah.
Like he does
yogurt.
A really Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like with the yogurt. Like sort of letting her know, like, hey, I did this thing because I really like you and I want you to know that I went through the trouble to make you feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Peter Kavinsky's character was such a, he was so good at sort of getting to her without making her feel totally uncomfortable. So he sort of like pulled her out of her comfort zone in a way that was so respectful that I just,
right.
It touched me so deeply.
Yeah, he never pushed.
Right.
I think the obstacle for them, you know, a romantic comedy always has an obstacle. For much of the film, the obstacle is really her getting comfortable with how much he likes her. Because after the beginning, there is a certain amount of like smart alecky banter at the beginning. But once you get through kind of that opening act, by the middle, it's pretty clear that he really is into her and he's communicating that he's really into her. And so it's sort of about her being able to be okay with, and I think this is a lot of what you guys are talking about with kind of vulnerability and being able to accept somebody's attention. But a lot of it is really just about her kind of just learning to feel like it's a normal thing for somebody who's really cute to be really into her.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the other things that I thought was so interesting is that there was a piece in the New York Times where Jenny Han talked about the fact that a lot of the places that wanted to adapt the book, a lot of the production companies kind of said, well, she doesn't necessarily need to be Asian American, does she? Like, she could be, because in the book, her mother, who has passed away, is Korean American, but her father is white. She said that in those conversations, it was a lot of like, well, it'll just be the best person, and maybe it'll be an Asian American actress, maybe it won't, because like, it doesn't really, quote unquote, matter to the story. She talked about going with like the one production company that understood like, no, I want to cast an Asian American actress. Mm-hmm. And then there's a, it goes together nicely with an interview with Lana Condor where she talks about seeing the casting notice and being so excited because she felt like I actually have an opportunity to get this part because they're specifically looking for an Asian American actress.
I mean, so when I saw that interview, I think I was still coming off of the high of Crazy Rich Asians. And I was thinking about how The Hollywood Reporter revealed that Kevin Kwan basically optioned the rights to his book Crazy Rich Asians for $1 because he wanted to be able to have the story told the way that he wanted it, where, you know, certain characters remained Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that Jenny Han went with the one production company that agreed to let her have that because I think it makes such a huge difference because, I mean, when you guys were teens, did you read books like this and, like, did you ever feel seen or represented?
Yeah, there were a couple, but, like, it was, like, I mean, I always wished that they would turn into a movie or something like that, and that never really happened.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember there was one called Dancer. I think it might have been by Laurie Hewitt. The main character was this black girl who was a ballet dancer, and she, like, fell in love with this guy, and she was, like, trying to go to college and all this stuff like that. And it was, like, I think I read that over and over again between the ages of 13 and 17 just because there wasn't really anything else like that out there that spoke to, like, a regular middle-class black girl, like, who, you know, was just, like, falling in love and, you know, following her dreams or whatever.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't have any experience with anything that made me feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
It was always me kind of doing these mental gymnastics to fit myself into other people's narratives that didn't fit me. You know, I had heard the reports of, you know, Crazy Rich Asians and then also this movie, having to twist and turn and like take these side roads to get to the final point.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to see someone different. Like, they don't even have to look like me, just the fact that they are someone else and not the same person, the same type of person that is always, always, always put into these lead roles. I couldn't imagine watching this movie with someone else. Even the yogurt moment, like, what would we have done without right. that. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was such an important part of the story.
Well, and the thing is, it's one of those things where once you get past the idea that a white character kind of doesn't have any characteristics, do you know what I mean? Like that's just a quote unquote person. Like that's just a it doesn't yeah. matter who it is, right? Then you start to realize that even though, quote unquote, it doesn't matter to the story, there are elements of her family, like the fact that her dad is always trying to make Korean food and he's right. not that right. good at it,
yeah.
and the yogurt thing, and a few other things. It's like, it does matter to the story in the sense that, and this is really what Jenny said in the New York Times piece, is like, that's her identity. That's who she is. It's not a matter of, like, you couldn't tell a similar story with a different person, but it's definitely part of who the character is, you know? I also really liked the fact that in this story, you so often see sisters who are either fighting all the time and then they have yeah. a big reconciliation, or they're kind of totally about jealousy of each other and things like that. I loved the fact that these three sisters, Larjean has an older sister and a younger sister, they see each other as, like, their closest allies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things I love that they subtly touched on with this movie, regardless of what they've done or how they've made you feel, sometimes there are just certain lines with your siblings that you're never going to cross. And I love that they were able to create tension and drama mm-hmm. between Larjean and her older sister, Margot, without having something catastrophic or really disrespectful or really, really sad happening.
Right.
Like, Larjean had a specific moral that she wanted to stick to as far as, you know, crushes and boys and things like that, out of respect for her older sister and her feelings. And she never wavered on that throughout the entire film, no matter, you know, what the circumstance may mm-hmm. have been. And they didn't make a big deal out of it. It was just like Lara Jean's going to be decent because, like, everyone in this movie is pretty decent for the most part. Yeah. Lara Jean was going to do the right thing by her sisters regardless.
Right. And Margot also trusted that Lara Jean, I mean, she might have been initially upset by something that happened, but she ultimately trusted that Lara Jean actually had good intentions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important dynamic to show, especially in YA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think it's just like a very POC thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, as far as like family bonds and like people sticking together and your family being your closest allies. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this last night with my boyfriend and another friend of ours. Like, people of color fall in love. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We fall in love and we can have beautiful relationships and we can have feelings. And it doesn't always have to be like the middle of the Korean War. It doesn't always have to be like the civil rights movement. I mean, and those stories are important too, right? But it's just like the everyday sort of like mundane, I have a crush on a boy in high school thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's so nice to see a young girl of color mm-hmm. in that position. Like, I'm so used to putting myself in the shoes, like you said, Kiana, of white people in romantic situations yeah. in so many films. I'm like used to seeing things, like used to not just seeing people that look like me on screen and relating to them. But it is something different that even though I'm a black woman, I'm not, you know, Korean American like Lara Jean in the film, but like I still feel something when I watch her falling in love with Peter Kavinsky on screen. I can't quite describe it because it's not like how I felt when I saw Black Panther. But it does feel different. It feels good.
It really excites me. And
yeah.
I read the books right after I saw the movie a couple times. And so there is a plot line in the movie that I think the book touches a little bit more, where it's a lot about consent and how we shame women for desiring, you know, sex or anything mm-hmm. sexual. And I think that that is a really important plot point that I hope that they get into a little bit more when they make more films out of this.
Yeah.
If they do the sequel and the third.
Oh, God, I hope they do.
Well, and Lara Jean's father talks to her about birth control and stuff like
and
that.
Condoms,
you know, in case that's what she wants to do. And I thought that was really interesting. And the film is such a continuation of a tradition of teen movies in a way that I also thought was so sweet and appealing. I think the song that plays under the very end of the movie reminds me a lot of If You Leave from the end of Pretty in Pink. There and Jenny Han did a series of like little boomerangs where
yes.
she had the cast reenact like a thing from 10 Things I Hate About You and a thing from Breakfast
yeah.
Club
yes.
and some other stuff. And I think it really lives in that tradition, and that makes it really, really nice too. Oh, gosh. It's so good.
It's so romantic.
So good. It's so good. It's so romantic. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Kat at Kat Chow. You can follow Brittany at BM Loose. And you can follow Kiana at Kiana Fitz. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. And tell us, as if we don't know, how much you love To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Thanks to all three of you for being here, by which I mean up there in New York together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening. We will be back here on Friday. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help more folks to find the show. We will see you all back here on Friday.
Hey, Tamara.
Hey, Domenico. All week long, Brett Kavanaugh will face his Senate confirmation hearings.
Yeah, he's President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, and there are going to be a lot of questions about how he could transform the Supreme Court for a generation.
The NPR Politics podcast will be following those hearings, and we'll hop in the studio every day to break down what you need to know.